Welcome back to the Unstressable Podcast. I'm your host, Alice Law, and this podcast is a series of amazing conversations with incredible people talking about what makes them unstressable from some of life's greatest challenges and the greatest stresses and losses they've had to overcome and how they came back from them so that you can become unstressable through yours. My guest today is the wonderful Karina Tala. Karina is a healing coach and inner child expert. She's the founder of her How to Heal method, and she shares with people how to heal your inner child and reparent yourself to transform your life. Karina's had an incredible story and journey herself, and it was a life-changing journey of self-love, self-healing, and self-discovery to break free from her own past, which she now teaches others how to do the same. She really is an incredible example of the ability to be able to heal from things that we don't think we probably will be able to, that are so traumatic in the past. I hope that you really enjoy this inspiring conversation and we get to listen to all the many things that she's able to enlighten us on, from Ayurveda to inner child healing and so much more. I hope you enjoy. Well, Karina, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. I'm so excited to cover a lot of things that you do. So it's going to go to a lot of places, guys. I'm excited. Thank you for joining.
Thank you so much for having me. I've really been looking forward to having this conversation. It's always exciting to get stuck into healing topics. So yeah, let's go for it.
Definitely. So, I mean, you are a healing coach and an inner child expert, but how did you come to be those things? You know, what was that process for you?
Yeah, well, it's a long journey. So I hope you've got some time to stay with me right now. So my professional title as a healing coach has been a professional journey of my own over the past few years, as I am qualified in different areas of holistic healing. So I'm first an Ayurvedic medicine practitioner, where I have trained in the UK and trained and lived in India, studying the world's oldest holistic health system. So that was my kind of first love with holistic healing that helped me on my own journey, which I'll talk a little about later. But following that and alongside that, I studied in inner child therapy, mental health, Reiki healing, Rahani healing, women's circle facilitation, you know, loads of different areas of holistic healing that really firstly helped me on my own journey. And then naturally, I think what helps us heal first, we then can feel really inspired to go on and want to share that with others and with the world. So I've had an interesting journey with my kind of professional title, let's say, over the years, because I was like, I'm not an Ayurvedic doctor only, and I'm not a wellness coach only, you know, it's just like, but what is it at the crux of what I really, really do that combines all these holistic health practices and healing practices? I genuinely woke up one day and I was like, I just work as a healing coach. You know, that's really what it is at the end of the day. I didn't really see anyone else using the name, but I was like, this just feels right. It's hard because as humans, we're so many different things. And we're so many kind of multifaceted beings and we can't really put ourselves into boxes. But of course, you know, from a professional standpoint, we kind of have to in a way. So to be a healing coach has been a few years of my own refined teachings and education and certification, which I love. And I'm always learning still. Like, self-study is such an important part for me. And I think it's a really important part as a practitioner. I think we should always kind of be open to learning and developing our practices. But I guess the real story that got me there in the first place, right, is my own healing story itself. So I became really unwell around age 20 with my physical health. And that was a result of poor mental health for basically my whole life since childhood. And I never knew or understood anything about health or healing, emotions, mind-body connection. It was not something I grew up with. It was not anything I'd ever heard about. But when my physical body started shutting down around age 20, this was a big wake-up call to, you have to try and figure out what's going on. And that was really hard because it's at a time where no one on Instagram was talking about health or healing. Mental health was very taboo. It was actually kind of weird and a bit embarrassing to even mention. You know, there was no talk of trauma. I hadn't heard this word. I lived a very traumatized life, but I didn't even learn that word until, you know, when I was around 20 years old. And I was like, wait, well, my whole life has been like completely complex, messed up trauma. I had no idea. It was just my existence. So these things came a lot later. And I always do wonder what would my healing journey look like if it started now, where there are thousands of coaches and thousands of influencers and thousands of people talking about it. I wonder how different it would have been. But my own personal experience was extremely lonely, extremely isolated. There's a point in my journey where I didn't see anyone for a whole year apart from the person I was living with. Like, my healing journey was me in my bed alone with my resources were books. I was learning from books, not from Instagram posts. I was literally learning from books and trying to figure out where these doctors were. And, you know, there was no Zoom, Skype, or, you know, sessions, or getting on trains to go see the practitioners. You know, it's a whole flipping different world, which I'm grateful for because it's really refined me as a practitioner. I've kind of lived in both sides of the healing realm. And I feel so incredibly grateful and fortunate that things have evolved as much as they have today, where we can just, you know, see a practitioner, even like yourself, or just have a Zoom session from your bed. And it's just so much easier. But my journey was not that. It was the graft. It was the complete opposite. It took me on many paths. So Ayurvedic medicine was a big part of that. But really, the first ever healing modality I had my mind opened up to, I was 17 years old, and it was actually a Reiki crystal healing and acupuncture. So the lady I was working with, she was doing both. And I remember just thinking, oh my goodness, what just happened to me? That was incredible. What is this? Like, wow, I've just been opened up to a whole new world. So my healing journey started when I was 17, but it was a difficult time because I was kind of half my life was still living in complex trauma. And the other half of me was like, we need to figure a way out of this. So I kind of living in two worlds, opposite worlds at the same time for a long time. But again, it's because there wasn't any viable resources so much, or loads of people you can look to inspire you of how to figure it out. It's like just your own trying to figure it out. So yeah, it's just been a journey of chronic illness, mental health imbalances, intergenerational trauma, a perfect melting pot to end up on a healing journey, basically.
Yeah, I really relate to what you were saying about reading your books and not having anything. Mm-hmm. You know, that's how my healing journey started. You know, I was with my job at the time, I would just on lunch breaks be sat there when all my bosses were out, just devouring books and devouring like TED Talks and trying to find like whatever I could, because there wasn't those spaces, you know. And that's why we both kind of created what we've created now, really. It's like leads you to be like, well, there needs to be these outlets for people. So it's so true and interesting. Mm-hmm. So, okay, you talked about obviously your healing journey, but I always like to know from people, you know, what was the greatest stress or loss you've personally had to overcome? And, you know, how did you come back from that?
Oh, this is such a good question. And like, there's been a few, I'm not going to lie. You know, there has definitely been a few losses. I think that is a part of the healing journey. We go through grief, we go through loss, whether it's a person, personal, whether it's metaphorical, you know, emotional or mental. But I think for me, one of the biggest kind of losses I had to work through, there's been so many, but I would say a more recent one, let's say, was when I went through a complete family estrangement. That was one of the hardest things I ever had to go through. So I'm an only child, born into actually technically a very big family. My mom is one of nine. My dad was one of five. Okay. So my mom's Portuguese and Madeira is very traditional to have really big families. And on my dad's side, so many aunties and uncles as well for me. However, unfortunately, nearly all of them struggle with severe mental health issues or addiction or incarceration or crime. Like, it's really, really, it's tragic. And that is a result of all of their own childhood trauma. So this is really why I do the work today, not only my own childhood trauma experiences, but nearly 100% of all my family members are not mentally well today as a result of the childhood trauma they went through. So I have technically a really big family, but no family at the same time. So it was a little while back where I actually reached a point where I had an episode called pericarditis with my heart. So it essentially feels and is the same symptoms as a heart attack recently at the age of 24. And it was one of the most terrifying moments of my life because I faced my death and I was in the cardiology emergency ward and unit, strapped up, just genuinely thinking like, I'm going to go, I'm going to leave my life and this is it. And that's really scary. So that was my biggest wake-up call from my own body, from my soul and spirit, saying you need to clear from all this family, all your family, so you can really start again. Because a lot of toxic cycles are repeating themselves, and certain family members still weren't learning the lessons or weren't seeing the abuse that was happening still, although it was a milder version of compared to the past I grew up with. The present moment, like, things start really changing, and this kind of stress that my body was going under, there was no denying it anymore. You know, we understand mind-body stress, we understand chronic illness, etc. And I had to kind of face that at a very young age. So after certain episodes and going through this whole journey of pericarditis, this kind of heart disorder, I made that decision to have some distance from everyone. So I don't have contact with my biological father anyway. So I kind of have the grief of not having a father, or last time I saw him, I was 10 years old, and that relationship is complex. That's a grief in itself. But then the kind of second grief was now not having a mom and not having anyone around me. I couldn't go to them anyway. But when you come from trauma backgrounds, you hold on to your family because it's better than having nothing, even if they're causing so much stress. You're like, well, it's better than having none, so we'll just keep you creepy motherfuckers, you know? So it's like, oh my God, it's difficult. Yeah. However, I finally, I had to put that boundary up. So I had a long 2 years of being on my own. And when I say on my own, I had friends with me and really amazing people in my life, but it's a different feeling when all your friends go home to see their family, and then who are you left with? Yourself. It's a different feeling. So I've had to really find an inner strength within myself during that time. Like, unbelievable. It's really hard to put into words the pain you feel, because now the peace comes up that you have to face everything even more. Because there's one thing of healing when the trauma is active, and there's one when it's all calmed down and you're left with kind of like the debris of the storm of your whole life, and you're like, oh my God, how am I going to do this?
Totally.
You know? So it was all there waiting to go through. So it was a complex time, and I honestly generally didn't think I would see any of them ever again, like even my own mother, which is so heartbreaking. But healing works, and we have seen each other in the recent times and rebuilding things in a healthy, different way. But I had to focus on healing my own inner child to be able to get to that point. So my own healing work that I share with others, lo and behold, I'm doing it first. Trust me, behind the scenes, you know, really, really going deep inside of myself. And it's powerful, because healing really does work. And you can rebuild things that you never thought you'd be able to rebuild. And you grow into a different person, a better version of yourself. And you allow the past to be in the past while slowly being able to move forward. And that takes a lot of courage, a lot of strength. You have to cry a lot of tears, self-soothe a lot. But this is why we have the tools, you know. It doesn't mean life just suddenly becomes like wonderful and easy and perfect. It builds and gives you resilience to navigate those storms. So I think for me, grief and biggest losses have been around like family. Family hurt, family heartbreak, whether they're physically not here or they are, and it's just energetically they're not. I think as humans, that weighs heavy because we're so wired for relationship and social human connection. And when those are faulted, or they have been influenced or impacted by pain or struggle, that literally breaks our heart over and over, right? But often that heartbreak is such an amazing catalyst for transformation and growth and healing. And the feeling of a heartbreak is sometimes just the thing that is going to magnetize you to be the person you are today. And I think it teaches you to love deeper as well. You know, when you can overcome certain things and you can learn how to forgive and move forward, you're equally as open to the love that comes after it. And that's a blessing. So,
yeah, totally. It's so true though, what you were saying about, you know, that family losses. Something like, I'm so sorry, you know, for you having to go through that, especially as an only child, to be estranged from your family. That's really, really hard. Like you say, like, we all want that community. We all want that family. I mean, I think I always think about those kind of things. I lost a sister and my dad. And at this point in my life, when my family members are sort of sliding on out, I don't yet have my own family, or like can't yet see how that family is going to be created. So I'm like, no, you can't keep taking my family away if I'm not yet, you know, creating my own family. And that's the kind of the circle, a normal circle of life that people expect. It's like, you know, you get, your parents get older, but you're already with someone by that point, you have children. It's, you kind of see that sort of shift happen and you lose them, and it's awful. But if that sort of placement in your life is already in place, it's a much more stabilizing situation to be in. So like you're saying, to just have no one around you, it's very, very just that lack of safety you feel is just really overwhelming. So mm-hmm. I'm really sorry that you went through that, but I know it's what's brought you to do everything you're doing now. And I want to go into loads of different sides of what you're mm-hmm. doing. But before we go into inner child stuff, what was it about your own sort of childhood that you really had to heal for yourself?
I've come a long way on my own journey to be able to feel comfortable talking about these things. You know, it takes a lot of courage over the years. But, you know, I was born into domestic violence. From being 2 weeks old was the first time my dad became violent towards us. So I have like a skull printed in the back of his fist in the back of my skull, like still today, like indented from where he first went to hurt my mom and got me instead. That was the world I was born into. So when we talk about things like nervous system and subconscious reprogramming and this, that was my foundation. I never knew safety. Mm. Not once. I never felt safe in my body until I discovered, you know, holistic healing and Ayurveda until like my 20s. I never experienced that. So my baseline was dorsal state in the nervous system, just complete traumatic primal survival mode. So domestic violence is very heavy in the household, addiction, abuse, just all the worst things you can think of. And honestly, when I look back, I think, how on earth did that small child like even survive through that? But when you are a child of trauma and things like domestic violence, you don't question it. It's mm-hmm. just your life. You have no idea that not every other household is living this way. You don't know that safe families exist. You don't know that other children are going back and being put into bed at night in a safe home. You don't know that. You just think this is what the whole world is like. So this is the issue where when we go through childhood trauma, where we start developing certain belief systems about ourselves in the world, habits, emotional blueprint triggers, it's coming from our childhood development. So when it came to me going through my own journey of life and starting to struggle with my mental health, it really came crashing down when I was around 11, 12. It was always bad, but I really then started to feel it. You know, I was suffering with PTSD from the age of 6. No, to the point where I would be seeing, you know, looking at my mum across the dinner table, and I would have a PTSD flashback, and we'd be literally sat across each other and her face would switch and all I would see was blood pouring down her face. And it's like 5 p.m. I'm 6 years old. I lived with that every day. I had no idea that that was not normal. And that was extreme, extreme complex PTSD. That was just life. And then from the age of 8, I remember that was the first time I wanted to self-harm. I didn't know why. Right, my spirit, my psyche was so hurt and literally so traumatized. It's trying to find a way to escape that pain. But again, you don't know any different. So when it came to around 11, 12 years old, that's when my like depression really just hit. And I just really couldn't see the point of existing. And I just didn't understand why I was on this planet. I had so many already by that point, 12 solid years of trauma, you know. What the hell am I doing here? Why am I even living? I never experienced things like after school clubs or having someone help me with homework. I didn't have any of that. My after school clubs was literally taking drugs, you know, with local drug dealers and getting up to no good and getting chased by police. Like I had the craziest, craziest upbringing. It's funny for people who went, they're like, you're so calm and you're so quiet and you're so chill. And I'm like, you have no fucking idea. Like this is a result of healing. Like healing actually works because if you can take someone like me to the point where we are today, like it actually works. But yeah, so, you know, it was hard. So 12, 13, this is when it all came crashing down. Again, there's no one to talk to about it. My mom did take me to the doctors when I was around 14, just saying like, I don't know what to do. You know, with my daughter, she's saying that she wants to die, but I don't know what to do. I don't know what to do. And they give you like a checklist and it's 10 questions. How suicidal are you? How much do you want to hurt yourself? But there's all these different things. And then you score, you know, 10 out of 10 and they just give you a prescription for antidepressants. And that is it. So can you imagine now being, you know, a young teenager with all this trauma and now the only form of authorities you think could potentially help you, like a GP, all they do is hand you a prescription and you're sent back out on your own, back out on the street. And you're just like, here we go. This is it. And this is what 99% of the population are dealing with right now. The NHS waiting lists are like 2 years long.
Yeah.
And I was in that for so many years. I actually didn't get hormonal therapy for years because it just never came around. It just was just so, so crazy. So bearing in mind, going through all of this, you know, my attendance at school was literally 30%. I only managed to put the bag out by year 11 when they were like, you're not going to actually have a life. You're not going to get into college if you don't pass your GCSE. You know, I did my mock, I got F's in all of them. So I'm literally like, I don't give a shit on the paper. Like, that is like where I was at that point. I didn't have any guidance or role modeling being like, you need to get a good education. You need to do this. You need to do that. So year 11, I really managed to kind of turn it around while still suffering with like panic attacks and depressive episodes where I wouldn't leave the house for like 3 months at a time. I would just like lock myself in a dark room and then I wouldn't come out again. And it was just this most toxic pattern. It's like, you're just living in survival. You're not actually living, you're just existing. So bearing in mind, I still had no idea that the reason I was having anxiety or panic attacks or suicidal thoughts, all these kind of things, was because of trauma. I had no idea trauma was a thing. Okay, but bearing in mind this whole history, I had no idea that trauma even existed. Never heard the word. That was just life. It's just honestly kind of fascinating now because I obviously study it so much and I work in it. I'm like, my goodness, this is what it is to be totally blindsided because of lack of education, lack of resources, lack of tools, lack of healthy role models and support systems. That's literally just what it is. That's why I'm so passionate as a teacher today. Because I'm like,
what was the light bulb moment though that made you realize that wasn't normal? You know, that what you'd gone through, those horrific experiences, wasn't normal. Like you said, you know, you just thought as a child, that's what everyone's going home to. You have no understanding, obviously, because there's no comparison when you're brought into that world and that's your immediate environment. So when was that moment for you when you suddenly like, oh, not everyone's lives are like this?
For me, it slowly began to drip feed during definitely adolescent years when I was going to other friends' houses for the first time. Let's say my more like normal friends, I guess, my non-criminal friends. I kind of go into these like nice family homes and it's like two parents and the house is all like nice and warm. And, you know, it's just like, and I was like, oh my God, I felt really awkward. I'd hate going to friends' houses for dinner. I wouldn't know how to sit around a dinner table and have conversation, engage with like more than one person. It would just totally freak me out. So I remember thinking like, what is going on? Why do I feel this weird around these environments and why are they all getting on and why is no one screaming and why is like, what the hell? You know, I laugh at it now, but that's genuinely my thought process, like just genuinely very confused, like actually confused. So more and more that realization. And then really the penny dropped when I first started getting therapy and I started to kind of share about certain things I was struggling with or dealing with. And then it was my therapist for the first time who was like, this isn't normal. And I'm like, well, I'm just telling you about my day. And he's like, no, this is not normal. And I was like, oh, like why? And that was genuinely it. Like it was him, my therapist, you know, a professional, the first person to really, really show and highlight like, no, none of this has been normal. And I was like, we have some work to do. Yeah. We got some actual work to do. You know, I think some practitioners, they like were born into these wonderful, you know, Ayurvedic families, for example, they're born into practices and they're learning breathwork from the age of three and they're having psychic visions from born. I'm like, I'm sorry, my journey just wasn't that. I'm just being real. Like, it just wasn't. You know, very different. So then I really hope that inspires anyone that no matter your background or what you've grown up with and whatever your beliefs is that you can turn it around. Like these
100%
universal for anyone. And that's really important for me.
I think you're incredibly inspiring. And anyone who's listening to this will love to hear that when we now talk about all the stuff that you do. So let's talk about the inner child because you're an inner child expert. Mm-hmm. First of all, for people listening, what is our inner child? Because some people don't even know that that exists as we were even talking about. So what is our inner child and how can people begin to reparent that inner child?
Yeah, good question. So inner child therapy is a therapeutic technique that allows us to unblock and heal trauma from our childhood development. From the ages of 0 to 18 years old. So the inner child is the part of you aged from 0 to 18 years old that still exists within you that holds onto limiting beliefs, negative thoughts, self-criticism, low self-esteem, worth and confidence, insecurity. It's the part of you that holds onto wounds that needs love and care and healing. So The inner child comes from inner child therapy, and it's a way of us just giving a word to call that younger part of yourself. So what is fascinating to break down is that technically we all have 18 inner children, 18 stages of inner child development. And as an inner child expert, you know, we understand that each of those stages of development require different forms of reparenting to heal certain wounds. So the term reparenting and inner child healing, that means to meet your unmet needs from childhood. So as an adult today, you can now give yourself what you didn't receive in childhood. If we don't, we are left with these kind of empty holes inside of us, whether it's lack of self-love or lack of security or safety, for example, and we will unconsciously seek other people to fill it for us. Okay, let me give some examples. So say if you didn't receive a lot of loving praise and admiration from your parents growing up, you now will unconsciously seek validation from other people, trying to get a need met that was unmet in childhood, right? If you didn't receive unconditional love growing up in your household, if you don't heal that wound and give yourself unconditional love, every partner you have, every friend you have, every person you come into contact with, you're going to be desperately needing their approval, trying to get their love. We become people pleasers, struggle to set boundaries, struggle to say no. So it's always this pattern. So in inner child healing, we call it the childhood adulthood mirror. Whatever struggles you're dealing with as an adult today, whatever it is, mentally, emotionally, physically, put up a mirror to your childhood to see when this first started and where that wound first kind of even began. You will always find the link. And that's really important to know, because so many times we can beat ourselves up. Oh, I'm just like this, just my personality. I'm just rubbish. I'm just stupid. I'll never be able to change or grow. But actually, no, it's coming from a wound that needs your love. And the best bit is, you are an adult now, which means you can give that to yourself. So on my own inner child healing journey, I had to look at everything I didn't receive. Okay, whether it was safety, protection, support, love, whatever it was, different areas, and become that person for myself. So when we say reparenting, we also give the term to become your own inner mother and become your own inner father. Okay, energetically, because energetically, women and the feminine, we hold different characteristics and qualities that may feel more nurturing and soothing and gentle and understanding. So we have to mother ourselves in that way with self-love and compassion. However, fathers have a different energy too, maybe more protective and motivating and supportive. So we need to learn how to activate our own inner father. So we could do both. It's not kind of genders, it's about the energy behind it, which is really powerful. So through this inner child healing process, you will learn how to heal all your kind of 18 stages of childhood development, become your own inner mother and father, meet your unmet needs, so you are no longer walking around with wounds of the past that come out every time you get triggered. Because we have spontaneous age regressions, which is when we get a trigger in the present moment, we find ourselves feeling out of control emotionally, not being able to hold our tongue or saying things we don't mean, and then regressing it after. And it's because there's a part of you that has been triggered. And this is due to the subconscious mind development. So as we know in science and psychology, the subconscious mind controls 95% of our daily cognitive functions. So everything we're thinking, feeling, and doing. But that subconscious mind is completely formed by the age of 7. Okay, so whatever you went through for the ages of 0 to 7, you're going to still have as an adult today. So with healing techniques, as we know, we're able to reprogram that, create new habits, new belief systems, and new thoughts that basically allow you to become a new person, essentially what we're doing, right? So it's all intertwined into many different areas, but just think of it as in life, you have you as an adult today, and you also have the little version of you that listens to everything you say to yourself, that is with you with everything you do. And when they feel unhappy, you feel unhappy. And when we start loving that inner child, we feel the deepest self-love, self-care, self-preservation, everything. And we ultimately become happier people, because the real goal of inner child healing is to be able to work through the trauma so you can be happy again and just go live your life. You know, like, we're not healing forever. It's like a technique to allow you to find a little bit more peace each day and rediscover things that you love and rediscover things that you enjoy. And just to mention as well, inner child healing is not just for childhood trauma. Okay, so that can be quite a misconception, as you only have had to have gone through the worst thing ever till your inner child. No, we were all once children. That's how we're adults today. Therefore, you have an inner child. No one is exempt to that. Every single person on the planet has an inner child. And you may have had experiences such as losing a pet, not getting to the school you wanted to get into, not fitting into a friendship group, feeling different, moving houses a lot, becoming part of a blended family, parental divorce. These are all very human things that we go through that also require inner child healing, because along the lines we'll pick up belief system of, I'm not good enough, I'm not lovable, I don't matter, I'm not clever enough, I'm not strong enough, I'm not this enough. And no one on planet Earth is exempt from that, not a single person. So we can use inner child as a healing technique to really get in there and heal those parts of us so we can be the healthy, integrated adults that we need to be for ourselves today. So I hope that breaks that down.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. I think it's such a good point of view to say, like, the common misconception for a lot of people sometimes listen about these things and they think, well, I haven't been through anything as horrific as that, so I definitely don't need that. Or they can't even remember what those moments were, whether they blocked it out subconsciously or whether they just generally can't, you know, think what those little moments that changed their subconscious were. But it's really important, like you say, to say to everyone, like, no one's exempt from this.
Quite literally, it's called the human experience. No one's getting out of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
I also heard something, actually, I don't know if you agree with this, if this is part of your like practice sometimes. Someone was talking about it. It could have been on Jay Shetty's podcast. I can't remember who. And they were saying that they put a photo of themselves at a certain age on their mirror so that every morning they tell that age of themselves that they love them and they have a good day and that sort of thing. And it really helps them to like nurture their inner child. Mm-hmm. Is that something you kind of advocate?
Yeah, absolutely. So I know the episode you're talking about. It was Kendall Jenner.
Yes, with that was it. Yeah,
and it went viral. Apparently, after that, inner child healing got like 678 million views on TikTok or something. Like, it went viral just after the episode, which is amazing because people need it and it's something that we can all gain from. So absolutely. One of the first things I'll do with my clients in session is, we'll firstly go through a process of actually introducing them to their inner child through subconscious meditation, and it is so powerful. I even got goosebumps as I even say it, because the whole process is just something that you can't explain until you experience it firsthand, because we can quite logically think about the inner child and process the information and the kind of, you know, rigid side of things, but actually the real magic happens when your eyes are closed and I'm guiding you inward and the whole inward journey begins and you see things you never thought you could, and the subconscious mind reveals the inner child in the most magical way. You know, when you see your inner child for the first time, it is like your heart gets put back in your body and you're like, oh, that hole I was feeling all these years, that's what it was. You know, no matter what you've been through, it gets put back in. And the inner child will reveal themselves in a certain way. You will see their face, what they're wearing. As we go through inner child healing over the few weeks with my clients, they grow up. So each time my client will be like, oh my God, they're actually older this time I'm seeing them. Like, wow, how did that happen? It's like amazing. So it's a pretty incredible experience as well, but definitely. So after you've actually met your inner child, I will then always advise my clients to do just that. So to get a photo of their younger self, put it in a frame, put it on their bedside table, and then every single morning, look at the photo of their inner child and speak to the inner child. So together we would create their own unique mantra that what they need to hear. So your inner child might need to hear, you are worthy, you're enough, and I love you, right? Or I'm here for you, you're safe, I protect you, depending on what your unmet needs were from childhood, which we then find together. We will take exactly what the inner child needs to hear, and then you start parenting yourself. So when the subconscious mind sees the image of you as your younger self, it builds that bond and builds that trust, and it's just amazing. So I always say as well, you know, you can put a photo of your younger self as your phone background, print pictures and put them like inside cupboards or kind of on sticky notes or the note next to it, just little ways, or in your car, just to remind you, okay, I'm on this chapter of my healing where I'm building this bond with my inner child. So it will get to a point where she's just there or he's just there and it's solid and you don't have to consciously think about it. It's just something that is innate within you kind of all day long. You know, as soon as you get a trigger, you know exactly what to do. You go straight to the inner child. You know what to say. You know how to regulate yourself. You know how to come back to calm. And I honestly think it's a superpower. Like, inner child healing is a superpower.
I love that.
Yeah.
So, I mean, you have many superpowers in the different tangents that you do. And something else I'd love to talk to you about is Ayurveda. Because I'm obsessed with Ayurveda. Yeah. And that was obviously how we met, was actually through going to that event with Morley from the wonderful Anita. And Morley, for everyone listening, is, you know, we've had Anita on the podcast. There's an amazing, amazing Ayurvedic skincare and health brand. It's just delicious. Mm-hmm. The smells, everything.
I love it. The best.
So, I mean, Ayurveda, first of all, for people listening, tell us a bit about the doshas. So in Ayurveda, we obviously have these four doshas. What are those doshas? How is that sort of the foundation for Ayurvedic healing and medicine?
Yeah, good question. So for anyone that doesn't know, Ayurveda is the world's oldest holistic health system. It is a sister science of yoga based on the mind-body connection. And the word Ayurveda translates to the science or wisdom of life. And they really understand to achieve optimal health and well-being, you have to understand how to look after your mind and your body. So Ayurveda has known for over 5,000 years the mind-body connection. Okay, what modern science is getting very excited about, that the gut-brain axis, the mind-body connection. Ayurveda is like, hello, guys. We have been talking about this for literally 5,000 years.
It's like, always the case, isn't it?
Always the case. Yeah, like we in the West, we like claim we invented breathwork. We claim we plumbers.
Yeah, literally.
No, these are not yours. Like we have, you know, humans have been using this for thousands of years. So let's also just vouch and understand that Ayurveda originated in ancient India. Okay, so this is, although, you know, from the doctors I've been taught by, they very much say, you know, yes, it originated in ancient India and in India. However, it is a philosophy for humanity, not strictly based to race or culture. So I really love that because we have to be very careful on white Westerners, cultural appropriation, using methods and philosophies that did not originate in our land or with our people. We have to give due diligence. So that's part of why I went to India to even study it. It was like, no, this is, I can't be just taking this. I have to really throw myself in the deep end if I'm going to do this. Oh my God, it was the biggest challenge ever.
It must have been amazing to go to India to study it.
It was incredible. I'll talk about that in a moment. But so yeah, so ancient India, Ayurvedic medicine, the doshas, they understand that there are five elements of nature. They're called the Panchamahabhutas, which basically are ether, air, fire, water, and earth. And they understand that everything in our earth, in the cosmos, in our mind and body is comprised of these elements. So when you're looking out to, say you're on a nice walk and you look up at the sky and there's ether and the sun is shining, there's fire. Look down at the river, there's water. You look beneath your feet, there's earth, okay? So, and you look up higher in the sky, there's space. So all these different elements compromising everything. From these five great elements, the doshas were created. So the first dosha is called Vata, compromised of ether and air. The second dosha is Pitta, compromised of fire and water. And the third dosha is called Kapha, compromised of water and earth. So we understand that these elemental qualities each have different characteristics or something called a guna, a quality, which gives it its essence. So for example, if you're looking at the element of earth, it feels slightly sluggish and heavy and rigid and solid. Very opposite if you're looking at the quality of ether, you know, which is light and moving and dry and vast. So they then understood that these doshas, Vata, Pitta, and Kapha, are present in the human mind and the human body. Okay, so characteristics of Vata in the mind, someone that is airy, quite fast, you know, has that kind of up and down motion, like the ether and air element, is going to have a very different mind to someone compromised of Kapha, which is the water and earth, more slow, calm, grounded. So we can actually understand people's personality and characteristics through the doshas. So I'll give a little breakdown because it's super fun. Like learning about the doshas is fun because you're like, oh my God, that's so me, or that's my mom, or that's my partner. And you know, you see people walking on the street and you know their dosha instantly. It's like this secret little gift you can have to understand people, which is amazing. So Vata dosha, when we are thinking of someone compromised of ether and air, we are thinking of lightness and creativity, imagination. They're often writers, poets, dancers, creatives, free spirits. They hate being tied down. They need to have freedom. They are quick thinkers and spontaneous in their essence. However, when Vata dosha becomes imbalanced, you can see things such as dry skin, hair and nails, irregular digestion, bloating, constipation. Also in the mind, you will struggle with things like anxiety, over-worrying, insomnia, ADD, ADHD, you know, all these types of kind of mind-body imbalances go on too. So each dosha has its balance when it's in its magic and its light, and also when it's feeling out of balance. So a little bit about Vata dosha. Pitta dosha comprises of fire and water. So this is about the heat, okay? So think of someone that's quite fiery and passionate and determined. You know, Pitta doshas make great entrepreneurs, managers, CEOs, teachers, scientists, leaders. You know, they're very much intellectual types of people, not so much spiritual in that essence, but they're very much more like pragmatic and they like science and facts and figures. Vata dosha is very much more on the spiritual type of things. They don't care about stuff like that. And they're just like one with source and, you know, just doing the things they want to do. So when Pitta becomes imbalanced, where there's a lot of fire and heat in their system, they can be prone to things like acid reflux, heartburn, acne, psoriasis, hives. It's more inflammatory disorders, also things such as hormone imbalance as well. So if you're feeling hot and flustered, you know your Pitta is getting quite high. Last one we'll cover quickly is the Kapha dosha. So Kapha is comprised of water and earth. So these are your grounded, nurturing, soothing kind of mama energy types in the world. So I love having Kapha dosha people around me because I have quite a lot of Vata energy. So I'm like, I need your grounding. Give me your grounding. So Kapha dosha, they have such big hearts and they are so loving and kind and compassionate. They're very much can be in a lot of healing practices as well. So counselors, therapists, nurses, they have a lot of grounded energy to be able to hold that level of space for other people. However, when they do have a lot of big hearts, they can overgive, not put their own needs first, self-sacrifice too much. And when they become imbalanced, where there's a lot of this earth energy and earth element, they can be prone to depression, living in the past, holding objects in the home, overeating, not being able to wake up in the morning, oversleeping. So as we can see, those doshas and how they represent and manifest in the mind and body, they have unique characteristics. Understanding is a really good part of healing because you can really identify, okay, then the diet and lifestyle solutions that come with it for each one, which is another part of Ayurvedic medicine. So I hope that gives people quite a fun introduction to it.
Yeah,
so I'm thinking, oh, that's me, or I resonate with that, or maybe you're all three, okay? Because when it comes to your constitution, we are primarily two of the doshas. So you can be Vata Pitta, Pitta Kapha, Kapha Vata, Vata Kapha, you know, all the different combinations. And sometimes you can get a tridoshic person, which means you're actually equal balance of all three. I've only ever met two tridoshic people in my life. And as an Ayurvedic practitioner, you're like, oh, it's like the golden ticket. You're like, oh my goodness. It's the most fascinating thing. Like, you're just obsessed. You're like, wow, this is too much. So yeah, you may even be tridoshic.
I love that. I think if you told me once, I think I'm Vata Kapha or something. Someone once.
Oh, amazing. Okay. Yeah.
Like,
wonderful.
Which makes a lot of sense to me. I'm like, yeah, okay.
Yeah. I really find Vata Kapha interesting because they are the polar opposites of each other, but it's powerful because Vata Kapha has a lot of grounding, calm, neutral energy, but Vata has such a beautiful kind of light within it. You're able to get a lot of things done and have amazing visions and yeah, that's really cool.
Yeah, try. I love all that. I mean, for you, is Ayurveda just how you live your life still? The sort of, you know, lifestyle of eating directly for your dosha and nurturing yourself in that way? Is that sort of, yeah, essentially how you keep yourself balanced always?
Yeah, primarily, you know. I would say I'm able to have a lot more balance now because that's, for example, when it comes to Ayurvedic eating and things like that, you know, as doctors, they always just say, if you're dealing with an imbalance or illness or chronic illness, you really have to stick to the doshic nutritional guidance because otherwise you're going to keep getting pushed out of balance. But once you're really healed, it's okay to dip into other foods and things like that that aren't, because otherwise it becomes too restrictive and we're not about creating eating disorders over here. You know, that's not what we're doing. It's about using the diet if necessary and when. So now I will primarily try and stick to more Vata Dosha diet because that really works well for me. But I will have some other foods, of course, and allow balance in my life because that's really important and really healthy. So when it comes to the lifestyle side of things, that's definitely, I just love it. It's not like a thing I have to do or a chore. Like, it's something I just love and have done for years now. So having my Ayurvedic Dinacharya, so morning routine, bedtime routine, practices that come from Ayurveda, you know, if you've ever practiced breathwork or yoga, got massage, drunk herbal tea, like you're already practicing Ayurveda without even realizing it. So the main thing that I love about it is that it really teaches you how to love yourself. And this is part of my inner child healing reparenting that I teach my clients and my students. Is a real big part of it is the lifestyle part of it. It's actually how to take care of your physical body and your mind is so unbelievably powerful. So in a sense, Ayurveda teaches you how to reparent yourself. It was the first thing that ever taught me how to look after myself. It was literally like my first proper parent being like, this is how you go to bed. This is what time. This is what you do. And I was like, wow, you know, just raised by Ayurveda. Quite interesting. So in that sense, if you kind of break them down and see that mirror, they're so beautifully linked. And I love teaching the people I work with about it because it's the original philosophy. Mm. There's so much modern wellness can get really confusing, but Ayurveda is it's the OG. It's the first one, you know, it's the original. Like, not there is nothing before it. Literally nothing before it. I mean, you can't go more to the source and the roots of health and wellness than learning about Ayurvedic medicine. So I think it's a really powerful source to know as well.
Yeah, I'd love to learn more about Ayurveda because the little bits I've delved into, I think, have been so great, whether it's like supplements like Trifala for my digestion and ashwagandha to kind of like calm nervous system when I was going through grief and different things like that. I just thought I had a practitioner who also, you know, my own energy therapist who is trained in Ayurveda, and she said to me once to like oil my feet before bed to like ground my energy when I was feeling like, and it's now something, you know, I tell clients to do as well because it's so good. It's so helpful.
That's like my favorite, like bedtime every night, hands, heart and soles of your feet. That is the best.
It's so relaxing. And you do, I feel like, because, you know, I'm a Reiki master and an energy practitioner, and I love delving into all sorts of energy, and I can immediately feel my energy ground properly into my body when I oil my feet at night. And that's such a nice practice to do. And I think anyone listening should just try do that before you go to bed because it really helps with your sleep.
Yeah, completely. Well, this is the thing. It calms the nervous system, regulates the vagus nerve even. So it goes so deep into our physiology and calms everything down, because what we are constantly trying to do in healing when we're grounding our energy is we're creating safety in the body again. You know, we can live so much in our minds. We need to kind of like eject back into the human body as we live down here as well. So when we're giving that nurturing massage and healing and touch, that sends signals to the brain to say, I am safe. I can rest. I can sleep. I can heal. I can, you know, do the things I need to do, which is an amazing practice. So yeah, anyone listening, please try and practice that tonight because it'll be amazing.
Exactly. It's great. So, I mean, we're talking then obviously about, you're saying grounding into your human side, and I know you're a very spiritual person, and I always ask everyone this question on the podcast, and it'd be lovely to know your answer. So what does spirituality personally mean to you?
Oh, this is such a good question. Wow. Oh, it means so many things to me. And it's funny because I would say I'm a spiritual person, but I do try as much as I possibly can to also live a normal human life as well. I have had times in my journey where I've been so deep in that spiritual side and I love it so much. I feel more at home there, but I'm like, no, you're here to live in this world and you're here to live in this life and do that. So I don't even identify myself so much as a spiritual person extremely anymore. But I think maybe because it's just the way I live and it just is who I am. I don't feel it's new anymore. Maybe that's why we get very normalized to ourselves and don't really see it. But spirituality, what that truly means to me is to really discover who you are, discover why you're here, and to live life with a sense of purpose and a sense of love and compassion for yourself and others. That's what it truly means to me. Because so much of our suffering that causes spiritual pain is the pain from not loving ourselves and then passing that pain on to others and then traumatizing other people. It all comes from lack of love. Everything comes from a lack of love, a lack of connection. And so when it comes to learning to discover who you are, it's like, take that time, take a chapter in your life to breathe, to stop, to pause and look at yourself and start learning about yourself. You can discover who you are and befriend that part of you, because you're going to spend the rest of your life with yourself. So you have no other choice. You have to. You have to look inward. You've got to live and do this. Otherwise, it's going to be a long journey and you want to have fun with yourself while you're doing it, right? And that sense of purpose, I think that's honestly the thing that genuinely saved my life, was this idea that as humans, we have this thing called Dharma, which means your soul, every single soul has a unique reason of why it's on the planet. And I believe that. I genuinely do. Maybe your purpose, someone is to be a teacher or a mother, or you love working as a hairdresser, or you love gardening. It doesn't matter. No purpose is better or worse. It's about finding the thing that lights you up and makes you really happy. And then you share that overflow with the world, right? You share your own self-love with the world. You share your purpose with the world. I think that's what we're here to do, because why else are we walking around all day? Like, what the fuck are we doing? If we're not here to find and discover being good people, creating good connections and sharing the things that we love in the world, like, we have to, we absolutely have to, because that's when you'd find true happiness. Like, I don't think I ever actually felt genuine happiness inside of me until I discovered that I was actually here for some sort of reason. Because I live such a purposeless, empty life. Why are we here? What's the point? What am I doing here? To suddenly this concept of, wow, as human beings, we all have a unique purpose. And you can then live your life living that purpose. I mean, that's incredible. What a gift. So for me, it's definitely that love and purpose is my spiritual beliefs for sure.
I love that. And I love that you're talking about that concept of purpose. That was, I don't know if you've ever heard the word entelechy before. So there was in Greek philosophy, like ancient Greek philosophy, I always think of purpose in this way now, is that I can't remember which philosopher it was, but coined the term entelechy, which is basically that every single person, like you were saying, or thing, has a unique purpose. That basically the way they described it was, if I'm an acorn and I'm put into soil and I'm watered, I'm not going to turn into an apple tree, because that's not my entelechy. That's not my unique purpose that's designed for me. But I will turn into an oak tree. And I love that concept that everyone does have something completely unique to them. It's just about finding it. And like you say, it doesn't have to be this huge thing. Like, oh, I have to go and save the world and do this and that. Sure. It's like that simple thing of, you know, like you say, just being a wonderful mother. That can be some people's purpose. And it's a really nice way to look at it as well. So yeah. I love that. Absolutely. Oh, Karina, it's been so wonderful going to so many places with you, and your story is so inspiring, as are you. You know, such a light. And thank you so much. I always finish with this last question. So what do you believe helps us to become unstressable?
Learning how to regulate your emotions and self-soothe is just what came to me in that moment.
Yeah.
I think 100%. Because what stresses out so much is our stressed up emotions and our stress hormones and our stress chemicals that make us feel stressed, you know? So I think when you learn to really understand and just regulate your emotions that cause stress, you learn how to feel them, release them from the body, self-soothe and self-regulate back into calm. You learn to build that resilience to stress where you can just live your life and continue your days. You know, because I didn't know stress to be in the past, it would spiral for weeks, for months. I didn't know how to get out of it. And then when you learn the tools how to get out of it, you're like, oh, this doesn't need to last for the rest of the year. I actually can just regulate this in a few minutes and move on with my life. Like,
exactly. Really,
it's like the best. So yes, regulating emotions and self-soothing, for sure.
I love that. I 100% agree with that. So important. Mm-hmm. Oh, well, thank you so much. It's been so wonderful. And I hope that everyone, you know, listening, if you want to work with Karina, I'll put how to find her in the show notes. And everyone needs to reparent their inner child, so just think about that.
We do. Oh, well, thank you so much for having me. I love talking about inner child healing and Ayurveda and everything in between. So yeah, thank you for sharing this space with me. It's been wonderful.
I hope you enjoyed that episode with the wonderful Karina. If you'd like to learn more about inner child healing and so much more that we talked about in this episode, then head to the show notes and look Karina up on her Instagram and her website. I really hope you enjoyed this episode. If you did, then please tag us in your stories on social media and let us know. We would love to hear from you. I'll see you next time with another incredible guest to help you to become unstressable. Stay tuned.